Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. So I'm looking around, I'm saying, we've just had a major American holiday. Now, in the summertime, we don't have a lot of holidays, but we have a couple, beginning and the end of the summer, right? Usually 4th of July kicks it off, and you have, well, people say Memorial Day, but it depends on where you are. Here in the Northeast, where we are, Memorial Day can be rainy, cold, and nasty. It can be 45 degrees, it can be 60 degrees, it could be 80 degrees. So you really can't tell. This particular year, Memorial Day was a washout with rain. So it didn't really kick off the summer the way you would expect it would. So I always looked for July, you know, early July. July 4th was the big holiday for me anyway. That kicked off the summer for real. Because everybody was out of school and you go about your business. Now you can do your summertime stuff. You're relaxing, you're fun. Whatever. And then at the end of the summer, you know, you have Labor Day. And that was pretty much marked the end of the summer season. Although here I could tell you in New Jersey, here at the shore, that is we call local summer. That means for all the people because we get a lot of visitors on the Jersey Shore. It's a huge destination area because it's beautiful. The beaches are beautiful. The water's nice. There's lots of, a lot of the towns have boardwalks and attractions for families. Really wonderful. But Labor Day was always considered the end of summer. We have what we call Bennies here. I don't know where they got the name from, but, you know, they call the visitors Bennies, you know, and Bennies, go home. That was the big scream. I used to always say, why would you want them to go home? They're coming here spending a lot of money in our businesses. But I diverge. But the reality is, you know, Labor Day marks the end, but in local summer, which goes all through September, the temperatures are still, you know, 70s and 80s, and the ocean water is high 70s, so it's absolutely beautiful. You can go to the beach, there's no crowds, you can enjoy yourself, and it's local summer. But as I'm sitting here, usually it gets quiet, you know, the summertime. There's not a lot of big events. You have festivals and stuff, and that's okay. But what's going on in our country? Is there ever any a quiet time anymore? Is there any more relaxation? I mean, everything is politicized. We're not out of the woods yet with this pandemic, although it does seem that we're getting closer. You know, I'm not sure if I can get Miss Kathy to jump in here with me for a few minutes today, but, you know, the whole vaccination thing, we'll cover that real quick. You know, this mandatory idea of vaccination. Now, I travel a lot for business, and if they're going to be asking me for a card, asking me my health records, asking me all this kind of stuff, I'm not happy with that. I don't want people asking me if I've had a vaccination or not. That's experimental. Right now, we've all been down that road. It's experimental, and why are we taking it? But we're seeing the numbers change now, right? We're seeing the numbers, the efficacy was 99%, and now one of them is down to 75% or 65%. Well, that's a big difference to mandate that people take an experimental drug that's only 65%. But what's the alternative? What is the alternative at this point? We all feel that there's something going on out there. And I don't mean all, every single person. I mean, lots and lots of people feel something's going on that's not right with mandatory vaccines that are experimental. And I was reading yesterday in the news, apparently the military, our military, United States military, is gearing up for an August mandatory vaccination program. So that means everybody in our military is going to get the shot whether they want it or not. And I guess they have the authority to do that. If you're in the military, they basically own you. So I guess they could make them take the shot if that's what they wanted to do. But why would you do that? You know? Well, I'll tell you why. Because we don't want to go into lockdown again. Because I'm starting to see things. There's this this variant of this, you know, the D variant or whatever they're calling it. Well, now there's another one. And I'm going to butcher the name, but it's like La Bamba variant is completely different. We're seeing parts of Europe are having trouble. We saw China the other day shut down an entire region again because of a mass outbreak. So this isn't over yet. And we're waiting to see what's going to happen. And it's not comfortable. It's one of the many things that are just not comfortable, just don't seem right. You know, we're going through it at my house, trying to figure out, you know, do my college-age kids have to take it? Do I have to take it to get on an airplane? You know, it's interesting. While we're on the topic of the summer holidays, the trend that we're seeing, this anti-American trend, was something that we've talked about for quite a few years now. I mean, it's been a building attack on everything American by our own brothers and sisters, by men and women who are American citizens and are completely anti the United States. It's uncomfortable. It's frightening. And I got to tell you, you can't really sustain a nation of people when half of the people in the nation hate the country. Now, I saw Senator Ted Cruz. He was on. He was talking about Representative Cori Bush from Missouri, young African-American woman. She basically came out and she was calling America stolen lands and said that black Americans are really not free. So I'm trying to piece together what is it that she means, because you have to listen to what people say. You know what I tell you all the time? The biggest problem with human communication is that we don't listen to understand each other. We listen to respond, right? So when I hear you say something, if it doesn't agree with what I think already, I'm coming up with my answer. I stop listening to you, and that's a problem. So I try and listen to what it is people are saying. So she's not the only one. The lovely and talented Maxine Waters has come out, and she has also made comments that this America is not for African American people. This is not free. We had slavery when our Constitution came out, when it was created, when we did our independence. So therefore, it's invalid. It's not right. And you got to change it. The other thing there's a big push for now, and this is how the left takes over conversations. They change the words. They take possession of the words we use. We know they're trying to control free speech so that you can't have free speech. But what we're seeing now is this attack on the American flag. I read at least two articles in the last couple of days where we have these prominent leaders coming out saying the American flag is a symbol of racism and hatred. It's not a symbol of togetherness, and we should do away with it, and we should find some other symbol that truly represents everybody in our country, because the red, white, and blue represent old dead white guys and slave owners and the horrible history of America. I apologize. I have to take a little sip here, and I got a little bit of a cold you can hear. I think it's just a summertime kind of cold, you know. But I want to keep my throat clear and that amazing pipes going for you so you can have a nice afternoon. Right, so this attack on the American flag is, I think, the latest assault that's building. It's building on our country. You know, who would ever think that, you know, if you're a patriot, you're now considered a radical, that you are a danger. You know, wasn't too long ago, a week or so, 2 weeks ago, maybe at the most, where our president, the president of the United States, Joe Biden, was talking about gun control, right? Gun control, and he wants to control, take away weapons and confiscate guns. And it's not a huge conversation he's having. Other people are absolutely saying it, but he's going along with everything that the radical left wants to do. But he was talking about weapons, and he goes, you know, what is this about freedom being watered by the blood of patriots? That's ridiculous. He says, and what are they going to do? What are they going to do to these people? You're going to attack your government? You better have F-15s and nuclear bombs. That was one of the most shocking things I've ever heard an American president say. So, you know, taking apart what people say, listening to their words to understand, for him to make a comment like that as the president of the United States, right? We know that the founding fathers, when they put the Constitution together, they were scared to death of man's ability to screw up everything, including destroying our own freedom. Now, you can argue that the Constitution, in one way, can be looked at as a suicide pact. We've given ourselves so much freedom that we can vote away our freedom. We can vote to go communist tomorrow and that would be the end of our freedom. But we have a right to vote for that. I mean, our Constitution is built that way. But when we see our founding fathers, they knew that the reality is that man's default position is to live under tyranny. And that's basically the reality. If you look around through history, you know, freedom like we have here in America doesn't exist anywhere else. There's different kinds of freedom, but the traditional American bedrock freedom that was established by our founding fathers, 1776 Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and all that, nothing else like it has ever existed. It has created more goodness for society, that we have capitalism and freedom and liberty and free speech, that it has changed the entire world for people everywhere across the globe. I mean, how many world wars has America come in and shed our blood and tears and our treasure to protect the world and our interests, of course? You know, fighting terrorism around the world. It's always America leading, always America leading. But this attack on our Constitution, our attack on our country, attack on our way of life, and the attack on the American symbol, the American flag, is what I see as the next bellwether that they're going to go after. If they can get rid of the flag and denigrate the flag, then they can come up with some other country, the United Brotherhood of America, or some nonsense instead of the United States. But what I was saying with Joe Biden, what shocked me, our forefathers knew that our own worst enemy was ourselves and the creep of government, that government would grow and grow and grow, and that's how people normally live under the yoke of tyrants. So they knew that would be a problem. And here's the President of the United States making fun of the fact that the Second Amendment to the Constitution is not there so we can hunt deer. As Governor Cuomo in New York was like to say, you don't need 15 bullets to kill a deer, right? He says that all the time. And now we got the President stumbling Joe Biden out there saying the same thing. What do you need? Clip with 100 rounds. What do you need a magazine with 100 rounds? What do you think the deer's wearing? Kevlar? I mean, what an absurd comment for an American president. But to follow it up and say that our traditions are useless. What are you going to do? Fight the government? This is what I'm saying. This is the essence. Do you get that? Here's the guy in charge of the government who should be saying, based on the Constitution and what our forefathers wanted for us, was that if the government got out of control, we would be able to fight back and stop it. Not to take over the country, not to have some kind of a riot where we take over the country like they're complaining about at the Capitol, which was just a bunch of idiots rioting. Wasn't an insurrection. Nobody, what are they going to take over the government if they got in there and got Nancy? Well, why am I now in charge? Of course not. Ridiculous. But the point being is that for the president to sit there and say, you better have nuclear weapons and F-15s if you think you're taking over this government, isn't that the most profound statement of F you and the Constitution and everything that it stands for out there? We are the government now. And all of that stuff, you know, that constitutional stuff, that's all nice. You know, that's nice to talk about and, you know, but you better have F-15s and nuclear bombs if you think you're fighting this government, right? The most frightening thing I've ever heard a president say along the road to losing our freedom. It's clear that he doesn't quite get his role as president is to defend the Constitution, to defend each and every one of us from his own government, right? That is his job as president. And he basically told you, you better defend yourself against us. Scary, scary, scary times. What was it that... Yeah, I'm trying to think of exactly what Maxine Waters said, because she's another one, too. You know, says some disturbing things. And my point about her, Cori Bush, and other people that are saying that America is not for African Americans, it's not freedom for African Americans, I'm trying to understand their point of view. Now, I think there has been terrible racism in our country. I think we did have slavery. It was a horrible institution. But I think what I heard the other day, I want to give credit to Sean Hannity. I was listening to Sean one day, and he was saying, our Constitution was built and our country was built so that, yes, there were bad problems, but we built into it a way to self-correct, to fix the problems that are going on, right? Including one of them, realizing the evils, the horror of racism and what it was and slavery, and we got rid of it and we tried to move on. Now, what I hear these people saying, these politicians saying, when they say it's not for African Americans, it's terrible, it's bad, I think that's leftover pain. Now, the pain of one's history, it's one thing for me to look back and say, and I've talked about this saying, you know, when I realized that back in the day they said, hey, no Italians need apply, no Irish need to work here. You know, that didn't happen to me. That didn't happen to me. I wasn't turned away for jobs because I'm Italian and Irish. But people in my family were. If you go back to the 1900s, my grandfather was born in 1900. One of them, the other one was born in 1901. Right, so they were born into that era. They were in their early 20s when that was happening. Irish not apply, Italians need not apply. And I'm sure it affected them personally. They felt the anguish of being an outcast, a group of people, for whatever reasons, the anti-Irish, anti-Italian were. And I use them because that's my history. So lots of groups have felt this. Our African-American brothers and sisters, I can understand that it hasn't happened to them, right? They're not slaves. They were never slaves. But in their family, there were people they can point to by name. And, you know, my great-grandfather was this, my great-grandmother was that. And so I think there's historical pain around racism and the slavery issue. And that's I don't know, I guess that's influencing how they see this, that this America is still not good. And maybe it's naive on my part. But I look and I say, you know what? All you got to do is get up every day, keep God in your heart, go to school, get yourself educated, you know, get your education as far as you go, high school, college, whatever. There's lots of options now for every single American, no matter what our race, creed, religion, or race is. You can certainly get to college, right? One way or another, you can get a college education. Then you go find a job or you start a business and you work really, really hard and you sacrifice. And if you do that, most likely you will find some success. Now, it might has to take two or three tries at a business, two or three tries at a different kind of job. But for the most part, you can start a family, you can buy a house, you can raise that family and have a good life. So when I hear things like that and I say, no, it's not really true. Okay, break that down. Is it possible that you can't move into any neighborhood you want? I don't think that's true anymore. Like, if you got the dollars, you can buy a house anywhere you want. You know, back in the day, they had redlining and they wouldn't give mortgages to people of certain races or religions because they didn't want them in certain areas. So they wouldn't give you a mortgage there. It was kind of an unwritten rule that people followed. It was racist, it was terrible. For the most part, I think that's probably gone. Now, I'm just a dopey white guy. I can't move into any neighborhood I want. I can't afford some of them. There's some neighborhoods that are absolutely gorgeous that I can't afford to live in. You know, I look around, I go, that house is $1 million, and it's not a big house. It's even in the area where I am, houses that were selling for $350,000, $400,000 are now selling for $800,000 and $900,000. Like, it's shocking. There's a house around the corner from me. It is a simple three-bedroom Cape Cod style house, probably on a 50 by 75 lot. Not a big thing. Not a big thing at all, but it's in the town of Point Pleasant, which is it's a small town, small community. It's got a good school system. It's close to the beach. So every piece of property in this town has super value. So this little three-bedroom Cape Cod, which is down the block from me, normally would sell for about $450,000, because to get into Point Pleasant, you know, the prices are up because there's limited number of houses available. And when one comes on for sale, there's usually a bidding war, two or three different bids above asking price, every single property, even the most rundown house to the most beautiful, spectacular home, two, three bids up and over the price of the asking price. Now, they just sold this house for $799,000. I cannot move across the street from the town I'm in into that town to buy a house that's smaller than my house, right? I can't afford to do it. So I can't live anywhere I want, and I'm just a dopey white guy. So I'm trying to understand other people's perspectives, because do they still feel the effects of racism? I think they do. And I think some of it is also blown out of proportion, where maybe it doesn't exist, but because they're sensitized to it, they see it everywhere. And I can understand that. So I'm trying to understand that. We want everyone to get along. We want us to all be brothers and sisters here in America. How wonderful would that be? But when people are coming out and making comments like that, now I would think the politicians are doing it to get a rise out of people so that they get constituencies, so that they can raise money for their campaigns. Look at what I'm doing. So, but it doesn't help. It doesn't help any of us to have such division in the country. Who was it the other day? Alan West is running for governor in Texas, which is interesting because Governor Abbott seems to be doing a pretty good job there in Texas. But Alan West, African-American man, military guy, very squared away, very decent guy. I mean, I think he'd be a fine president. He comes out and announces he's going to run for governor in Texas, and it's creating some controversy, but he's a guy who's been worked hard. He was in the military. He's made a great life for himself, and he's a leader. He's someone you can look up to. It doesn't matter that he's African American. You know, that's what we got to get away from. And he came out the other day and he said, I'm paraphrasing here. I'm not black. I'm not this. I'm American. And we all are Americans, right? That's what's frustrating to me when I see this, that these commentaries that people make, these glib little tweets that they throw out that are just a slap in the face of everybody else. It's really painful. So when you make people who are patriots now feel like they are the negative of our country, if you're a patriot, you are a crazy nut who wants to take over the government. You believe in these conspiracy theories. This is not good either. This is dangerous. This is dangerous for all of us. And as I sit here and I go into the summer months, you know, with our big American holiday, it's almost funny how it even has affected me. I see people cheering and applauding America, and it's kind of like, ooh, you better not say it too loud. Somebody might start looking at you. My father-in-law, Ted, how you doing? Ted listens in every day to America Out Loud. He's a biggest fan of the network, and he likes my show too. So I'm glad he's out there. Ted was saying the other day that you know, you got to be careful what you say. You know, you're a patriotic kind of guy. You're pro police. You're pro military. You're pro America. You got to be careful. You don't know who's listening. That maybe they come after you, right? Maybe they sick government agencies on you because of what you're saying and doing. And I said, I had to think about that. And it's an absolute reality. When you are patriotic now, you're looked at as some kind of a nut. Not by everybody, but I'm going to say it's at least half. You know, we used to say that all the time. The great Rush Limbaugh, God rest his soul, did a lot for our country to start the whole riff going on conservatism, the modern conservatism, really pump it up to make people aware of what it was and what it wasn't. And he would say all the time that, you know, we are a center-right country. We are center-right country, and that's what keeps us strong and this and that. And I used to always believe that somewhere behind the scenes, we were a center-right country. And, you know, the liberalism that we see, the socialism that we see growing, it's been growing for 30 years, that we see growing is really an undercurrent of what's going on, and it's really the minority view. It's not the majority of Americans. Most of us are more conservative in how we live our life than maybe some of the things that we say. Socially, there are people that are a little more liberal, but in general, we believe in America. We believe in defending yourself. We believe in our innate rights of who we are. We believe in God, red, white, and blue, and all of that. Well, I believe that for the longest time, but in recent years, I'm starting to question whether or not the natural progression of human existence, like I've said how many times, when you read my articles on AmericaOutloud.com, or if you hear me talk here, I say all the time, the default position of humanity is to live under tyranny because that is the easiest. Our forefathers talked about it. You know, if you're willing to give up some liberty for security, that's a slippery slope. And we see that now, don't we? I mean, these polls of young people who say that socialism not only would be better than capitalism, it would transform the world and make the world a better place if everybody was socialist. Well, lots and lots of these young people believe that, and they are assuming the roles of leadership. Somebody who's 30 today, in another 20 years, will be president of the United States. And if they have those beliefs, just like we saw the turning tide of the 1960s and the liberalism that came out of that, it took another 30 or 40 years to come to fruition as those people and their mentality came to power here in our country. And now we're seeing this overturning of traditional America, this destruction of traditional America, which leads me to ask a question. Is it already gone? You know, we keep talking about, we're going to lose the country, we're going to lose the country, we're going to lose the country. Is it already gone? Can you put this genie back in the bottle? Is it possible for us to go back to a more pro-American stance? I don't know. I don't know. I like to think that it is, because America is good. America is a godsend of the world. It's blessed by God, which doesn't mean I think God's running the country. Of course not. What I'm saying is it's been blessed by God all these years for freedom and human liberty. Who was it? Henry Winkler, the actor, you know, the Fonz. The Fonz came out the other day, and he sent a tweet out that really got people crazy. He said he says he's expecting that, you know, for us to all come together, we need another big calamity, right? But what he's meaning is that something would happen to us as a country, and that would pull us all together. Well, of course, he was lambasted on social media because people don't listen to understand. They listen to respond, and lots of the responses were, "Hey, idiot! We just had a pandemic. If that ain't going to bring us together, how can this pandemic bring us together? Look how divided we are on that. It's real. It's not real. Wear a mask. Don't wear a mask. Take a shot. Don't take a shot. Lock down. Don't lock down. Open a business. Put the guy who runs a business in jail. How is that? So their example, their response to Mr. Winkler, is not appropriate. I understand what he's saying. And in all fairness, there were some people who did respond on social media to him saying, listen, they understand he's a good guy. And what he means is he wants the country to come together, right? We think about 9/11, how the country was, and then there was 9/11, and suddenly we were all united together, right? That's the kind of thing he's talking about. Now, he's not asking for a thing like that, an attack on America. What he's saying is that kind of thing brings people together. And we, in other words, shake us out of our nonsense that we're going through here, this anti-everything kind of a stance, and bring us together as a people. What could it be? So I found his commentary really very interesting. Now we're going to go in. We're going to cover a little bit more in the next segment. Some other things that I see going on out there that I think are all connected. But first, I want to tell you a little bit more about the Healthy Cell. Right. So I told you I've been taking this immune boost, and I do feel 1,000% better, you know, besides my throat sounding a little funny. I feel really, really good. I take these things every single day. It comes in a little packet. It's like a gel. You can mix it with water. You can do different things with it. I take it right out of the tube. I just squeeze the tube right out and eat it that way. It's a nice blackberry, I guess, kind of flavor, but I do feel really good. I think clearer. I'm sleeping better. And I did a little experiment I told you about. I took it and I felt better. I stopped taking it, and I didn't feel horrible, but I certainly wasn't feeling good like I was. And now I'm taking it every day again, and I feel really, really good. So I'm going to tell you, Healthy Cell, Immune Boost, take a look at it. They're on the station. You hear them on my show. You hear them on other shows. If you're looking for something to boost how you feel, to boost your immune system, to keep you stronger as we come out of this pandemic, right? We don't want to choke on the cat's tail as we're coming out and, you know, get sick. So keep yourself healthy. And if you're looking for a supplement, if you're looking for something to help you, this Healthy Cell is actually working, and I do like it. And I want to, thank them for coming on and letting me see how this can be helpful. All right. So we're going to come back in a minute, and we're going to talk about a couple of other things. There was recently a guy in New Jersey, of all places, right? He made some racist statements, really absolute racist statements. He used, the dreaded N-word. He said some horrible things, and a crowd showed up at his house, and he was arrested and dragged away for racial intimidation. Is that free speech to say ugly words? I don't know. We'll be back in a minute with Chasing Justice, and we'll talk about it.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutLoud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
All right, then. Welcome back, my friends. See, a little bit of water, a little bit of juice, a little coffee, and my voice is coming. My voice is coming back. You know, that deep, debonair voice you're used to hear on Chasing Justice with Lieutenant Joe. All right, so summer reading, before I get into this other stuff, summer reading. There's a lot of law enforcement people out there that listen to the station in general, very patriotic people, a lot of military people. I've written a book, and it's called The Interview. It is the consummate work on how to conduct an interview, not just a criminal interview, but an interview. What goes on in the minds of people who are being interviewed? What do they do? How do they go? So it helps you conduct interviews. Now, it's designed for law enforcement and for security work. If you're an internal security person in your company or something, it can really, really help you. I've had people who are not law enforcement, but they have to do investigations, read the book, and they've told me that it really helped them, that it was excellent understanding. So you can get my book, The Interview, at Amazon.com. Look up Joseph Pangaro and The Interview. Or you can go right to the publisher, looseleaflaw.com, and get The Interview by me, Lieutenant Joe. I just want to throw that out there because it's good summer reading. I know a bunch of cops recently just bought it, and they're sitting on the beach reading my book. I actually know a group of young guys that just finished the academy, and I was on the beach the other day, and I'm walking by, and I see this one guy, I see my book in a guy's hand. Talk about a bucket list kind of a thing. But he's a young cop, and he's reading the book, and I hope it helps them throughout their career. I know I wish I would have had that information early in my career, would have made an even bigger impact on me as a law enforcement guy. So, guys and girls, get The Interview out there. All right. So, this guy, Ed Cagney Matthews, I guess from Mount Laurel, New Jersey. This guy comes out, and I guess he has some kind of a beef or a problem with some people in his neighborhood, local neighbors. And they get into a screaming match, and apparently it's not the first time that this guy is out there yelling and screaming and arguing with people. But he starts throwing around the N-word, racial slurs and this and that. And somebody calls the cops. The cops show up. He gets into a problem with the cops. So it sounds like a difficult relationship with the world around him. Now the cops get there and apparently they charge him. They arrest him and they charge him with creating a disturbance and with racial intimidation, right? So it's a bias-based crime. At the drop of a hat, it's a bias-based crime, even though on its face it does look like it was an ugly thing for the guy to say. You know, we've talked here about the N-word. It's just a word, but it hurts people, and it means a lot to them. There's a lot of hidden meaning to it. So then don't say it. Don't hurt people's feelings. Don't use the word, right? But isn't that cutting off your free speech? Doesn't this guy have a right to stand on a corner and say anything he wants? Unless he's making a threat to someone, I'm going to kill you or something like that. If he's just sitting there, shouldn't he be allowed to say whatever he wants, even if it's ugly words, right? So now we're at the point where they'll take you away for using ugly words. This is a paradigm shift. This is what I'm asking. Is the country already gone? Is the new America already emerging where patriotism is hatred, where the American flag is a symbol of hatred and should go, where America and its founding is considered in the mainstream illegitimate, and it's time to get rid of capitalism. It's time to go woke and socialism. Is that where we are really already? Can we put this genie back in the bottle? So what else happened with this guy in Mount Laurel? When the cops take him away, there was like 100 people showed up at his door when he first made this rant, they're calling it, and he went inside. Like 100 people showed up in front of his house chanting for him to come out. I guess they were going to beat him, kill him. I don't know. What would be the purpose of a group of people showing up chanting, calling you out after you've done something like that? You know, it wouldn't have went well, whatever. And the cops take the guy away. Then apparently the crowd went and attacked his condominium where he was living, smashed the windows, smashed the doors. This has become our accepted response, that violence has become an accepted response if someone offends you, if somebody says something ugly, if somebody believes something you don't believe. Violent response is appropriate now. I don't know that anybody that smashed up his windows was arrested. I don't even know that there's an investigation going on. But this tells you kind of where we are. I mean, look at last summer when we had mobs and mobs of people out burning, looting, destroying. And now, a year later, almost every one of those people have had their charges dropped. Not all, but most. In most states, they're dropping all the charges. So basically, they're saying that rioting and that looting and burning and everything was acceptable response to whatever it was that has everybody so upset, right? So if it's racism, it's okay to burn and loot and do things if you're against racism. Where's this going to go? It's really one-sided, right? Because then we saw the idiots at the Capitol on January 6th. We saw them, and I call them idiots because, like I said, their passion for a free America is one thing. Their decision to go into the Capitol was an idiot move. Everybody knows you can't just go in there. That's a place of business, even though it's our Capitol. There's places we can go and places we can't go, and everybody knows that. So going in there, yeah, they were trespassing. If they broke through a door, they were committing malicious vandalism and burglary, and they should have been charged. Now, we know there's a young lady, Ms. Babbitt, who was killed there. She was one of the protesters, and we've all probably seen that video of her coming through, I guess, a door where the glass was broken out as she's coming through. No weapons in her hand, not attacking anyone, just coming into this space. And we see a pair of hands and a gun emerge from another door, and a shot is fired, and that killed her, Ashley Babbitt. How come we don't know that officer's name? How come we don't know the whole deal about that shooting? If there's a shooting anywhere else in the country involving law enforcement, don't we know everything, including the officer's home address? In this instance, I saw one report where they leaked it was a lieutenant, right? But I don't know if that's true or not, because we haven't gotten the story. Other than the other day, the authorities have come out and said that they've determined that the shooting was appropriate and justice, and that'll be the end of it. There'll be nothing further. Well, how can that be? An unarmed young woman committing a burglary, if you even go that far, she's committing a felony burglary by going in there. Do you execute somebody for that? Somebody breaks into your house? Obviously, you can protect in your house, but this was a government building. And these people were sure, scary mob, I'm sure. I'm sure they were scary mob. It sounded loud, coming in, lots of people. But to just shoot and kill somebody? I don't know. How come we're not looking at that closer? Are we in a different world? And all of these signs kind of point to that. The hatred of the country, the violence is now an accepted response to things you don't like, and it's not gonna help us. So I wanted to cover that. Now, let's look at another indicator. The level of violence in our society that has grown up, that has started to really take hold. I mean, you look at New York. New York was the safest big city in the world. We've talked about New York here lots of times. I loved going to New York, going to dinner, going to see a show, spending. It was nice. It was vibrant, full of energy. But now you can't go to the city. There's violence all the time. People are attacked everywhere. In the broad daylight, in Times Square, is now a lawless place. You can get hurt. You can get killed in Times Square now. Go in the subway, you're taking your life in your hand. And they're not doing anything about it. The government there is not doing anything about it. They keep letting people out with no bail because that's fair, because people can't get out. Well, some people, you know, what they've proven was that if you take the core of the criminal element, whoever they are, and you sequester them in a jail, crime goes down, because some people who commit crime commit a lot of crime. So if you can get them off the street, you can lower the level of crime in an area. Right now, the whole idea of bail, though, is not to put people in prison. It's not, bail is not a punishment. Bail is to make sure you show up for court. So the argument is made that not everyone can afford bail. So if I got arrested for something, I could make bail and I'd be out. I'd be free. Go back about my life until I have my court date. Other people for the same charges would not be able to raise bail, and they would be stuck in jail, which is basically, that's a punishment. You're incarcerated. So I can understand that, but I think we have to at least take a look at how our judicial system deals with violent crime. If you commit a violent crime, you should probably be taken off the street and held until your trial. Now, that means you should have a speedy trial, right? That means not the 2 years later, because then you're sitting in jail for 2 years, but a speedy trial. Here's the problem with that. You know, that concept is great, because they used to do that back in, merry old England when they were ruling things here. The king would put you in jail and you'd rot there before you ever got a trial. So we wanted a speedy trial, right? The whole idea. But a lot of times it can come up, your first hearing, and your defense attorney is not ready. So they ask for a continuation. And if you're sitting in jail, you're going to sit in jail for another year till your attorneys are ready to go to trial. So how can we deal with this? I mean, we have to come up with a way. But the violence is my point. The violence we're seeing in our major cities. Chicago is like the Old West. And I don't mean to put down the Old West, but it is like the Wild West. Every weekend, there's dozens of shootings, dozens of people killed, and we all just ignore it. We just ignore that violence like it isn't even there. And most of the victims are our African-American brothers and sisters and children in the communities that are there. Why we're not going in and cleaning that up, I don't know. I think that's a travesty, and that's unfair to people who live there. They deserve to live in a crime-free area where you're not going to get, your 14-year-olds are going to get killed sitting on the front porch, right, by stray bullets from gunfights. It's ridiculous. I feel bad for everybody that lives there, and we should be doing more there. But recently, we're seeing this spike in crime, and I love the euphemisms for things. In Philadelphia, there was a cookout. There was a cookout. And it was a gunfight at the cookout. And two people ended up dead. Right? How many times do we hear, it was a birthday celebration and a gunfight broke out? Well, I don't know about you. I've had 59 birthdays and I've had children, and lots of them, birthdays. Not one time did anybody at any of those parties pull out a gun and start shooting people at my cookout or my barbecue or my birthday party. You know, it's such a euphemism for the violence that's out there. You know, it was just a birthday party. Well, how many gunfights break out at your birthday parties? This is a problem for us to have to look at, and when we report it that way, it's really, really dangerous. So they were saying that over the 4th of July holiday, there were 100 people shot across the country in random violence. This is not the people that blew their fingers off from fireworks this past weekend. But 100 people shot across the country, right? Really, really a problem. So we need to look at the violence and see what goes on here, right? In Ohio, and this is another thing. They're talking about a a party. I'm trying to think of the euphemism they used there. In Ohio, there was, we'll call it a party, a celebration of something, a 4th of July celebration. And of course, gunfights break out at this celebration. Again, I've been to lots of parades. I've been to lots of different festivals, and gunfights just don't happen. So what is really going on when you have a festival? And here's what I found interesting. Unfortunately, a 17-year-old male got killed, right? Which one of the people shot. But also, some of the other victims were between 11 and 19 years old. 11 years old and 19 years old. You say, okay, well, that's a birthday party. That's some kind of... This was at 12:30 in the morning. What are 11-year-olds doing out in the street celebrating anything at 12:30 in the morning? Do you see where this problem can come in here? See the difficulty we can have? So we want to think about it. We want to think about what we're doing out there, because the violence is just really, really crazy. So I want to turn the tide here for a minute and come up with something a little more fun. Interesting, anyway. Going into the bathroom, we don't think about that too much. We go to the... Everybody uses the bathroom all the time. Well, this guy in Austria, of all places, of Austria, goes into the bathroom, and I guess at a neighbor's house, and he goes to use the facilities there, and there was a 5-foot-long python in the toilet, a snake in the toilet, and I guess it bit him on the tuchus when he went in there. Now, you got to say to yourself, first of all, wouldn't you notice a 5-foot snake in the toilet before you would sit down? That's something I would pay attention to. I would look, give it a quick look. Take a look in there. What's in there? Any snakes in there? Alligators? What do we got in there? But this guy gets bit on the butt by a python. So when you start to look through the news stories, there's a lot of difficult things to pay attention to. But there are some interesting types of things like that. So a couple of weeks ago, we were having a conversation about what makes people do the right thing, what makes people do the wrong thing. We started talking about ethics and how does ethics actually work. And I guess you'd have to, it's tied to morality. Ethics are tied to morality. But if we take all of this stuff we've been talking about here, attacking patriotism, attacking America, attacking our way of life, attacking what we believe to be true, attacking our church, attacking everything, you say to yourself, are we still going down the right path? Are we still ethical and moral as a country? I posit that the change has already become. It's already started. It's already begun. And we're probably further down the road to these changes than we believe, because I don't know that you can put the genie back in the bottle. But when we talk about ethics and it's tied to morality, you say to yourself, well, first of all, whose morality? Right? Whose morality are you going to go by? You have to ask some questions, right? Is every community see the same things as morally undergirding that every other community sees? And there's no particular communities in my mind. I'm asking a question. Does everybody individually see the same things morally as everybody else? Or do we have different ideas about what is the right thing and the wrong thing? Well, it's pretty clear. We have lots of different ideas. What's considered okay in one community is not considered okay in another. We see in San Francisco, a lot of Target stores are either restricting their hours to like 10 in the morning till 6 at night, or 10 till 5 at night and then closing, or outright closing their doors and leaving. And the reason that they're leaving is because of all the theft, right? People are going in and wholesale cleaning these places out. And there's laws now out there that if you take less than $900 worth of merchandise, you won't even be arrested. Well, that could be a lot of merchandise at a Target. And if 20 people go in and do it, place cannot stay in business. So we're seeing that in San Francisco, the Targets are closing, or they're cutting their hours down because of the theft. There was there's a video you can see out there, San Francisco, a Neiman Marcus store, high-end kind of a store. There's a thing called a smash and grab, where you smash out the windows, you go in and steal stuff. Well, there had to be 50 people that smashed out the doors and windows and just cleaned this store out, and they had cars waiting for them. So they brazenly ran in, grabbed all this stuff, jumped into cars, and took off. This is a Neiman Marcus, a high-end store in San Francisco. It's part of the trend of crime and violence. You know, it's when I look back and I say, is there any precedent for something like that? You know, where is it that one group thinks it's okay to do that and they go out and commit this crime, and other people say, absolutely not. I would never do such a thing, no matter what I had to do. When I was actively doing law enforcement, we had a huge shopping mall in our community. And it was, when I first got there in the mid-1980s, the mall was vibrant. It was busy. It was, malls were a big deal back in the 80s, right? They were the shopping mecca. You could go in, there's 100 stores, you're inside. There's food courts. It was like a big circus. It was a fun thing to do. There's movie theaters. Everything you could want was under under the walls of the mall. And they were popular places to go for people to hang out, to meet. There's been countless movies made about people who work in the malls and all of that. But we had this giant property, and there was this gigantic mall, and it was doing really well. Well, after a while, what had happened was there was a lot of gang trouble starting to begin in a couple of the surrounding communities. And they started to come to the mall to claim it as their territory, which means they started doing their criminal business there. They started breaking into cars. They started selling drugs out of the mall. There was a woman abducted, taken up into the hills, where we had we called them the sand hills, or some woody areas around the mall, where she was sexually assaulted. We had a domestic violence murder in the parking lot. Well, next thing you know, the mall business from the regular people didn't want to go there anymore, and they stopped going. It became a place you didn't want to be, right? A lot of crime. So obviously the owners of the mall and the local police, our department, realized we had to do something about this. We cannot allow a lawless area. So we went in there in force, undercover, plainclothes officers, uniform patrols, and after a couple of years, we got a handle on it. Right? We got a handle on it and restored the mall to something where people could go and they weren't injured. We opened a little substation in the mall, so you'd see police presence all the time. The cops were always up there. It was a good take back of an area that was being criminalized. Well, that brought in more business because the land surrounding the mall, then we had some stores come in and say, hey, this is a thriving retail area. We're going to bring our store here. And the store that they brought in, I don't even want to say the name of it. It was a gigantic, like a Home Depot. Let's put it that way. It was a gigantic place like a Home Depot, but it wasn't a Home Depot. And it was doing great business. I mean, it was a great location, and it was just thousands and thousands of people going to this place all the time. Well, next thing you know, we're getting reports of some serious shrinkage problems, which is theft, internal theft. So we go meet with the security managers of this big giant box store, and they're telling us that thousands of dollars worth of material is being stolen by the employees. And I said, okay, well, how many employees? They said, we have 300 employees. We've been open for 6 months. We have fired all 300 people, and we've had to hire a new 300 people. And unfortunately, they're all stealing too. So you say to yourself, how can that possibly be? Well, a couple of the bigger cases that I did there, far as theft, internal theft, was you would have these groups that would show up, 10, 15 people, and they would walk in the front door and grab as much as they could and then take off to waiting cars in the parking lot, just exactly like I just described from San Francisco. They were organized groups of men and women, and an employee would let them know when the security was either on break or out of the building or, you know, not available. And these cars would pull up, people come in, and they would steal, you know, power tools worth thousands and thousands of dollars or whatever was around that had value. They would grab it and run out the door. I said, wow, that's strange. So we got a couple of employees to admit what they were doing. They were part of this. They were, you know, making money off of the stolen stuff. Then we found one, which was interesting. Security calls me and they say they think they have one of their young men there who works in the tile and flooring department. And they said, we think he's selling drugs. We see people come in. We see them talk to this guy. They go off into an aisle. There's some kind of an exchange, and then the people leave without buying anything. So we said, okay, that sounds like a drug deal, you know, hand-to-hand drug deal. Let's go take a look at this. So we did. We went in surveillance. We did on-scene surveillance. We watched their cameras, and it did look like this guy was selling drugs. Long and short of it, he was selling drugs. He was selling heroin and cocaine to his customers from his place of work because everybody could get there. They show up and do it. What we didn't realize, but we learned during the surveillance, was that there's some very expensive tile. You ever want to tile your bathroom or your kitchen floor? Well, you can buy the $1 a square foot tile, or you could buy the $40 a square foot tile, right? It's there's lots of choices you have on how much money you want to spend. And we started watching this guy, and we would see people looking at different kinds of tile. And whenever they would go look at the expensive tile, you know, pick it up, start looking at it for the color and the quality, it was obvious that they were kind of interested in it. We'd see this guy walk over. It was his job to be the salesman, and he'd start talking to them. And next thing you know, they would get a big cart, and they would load up all of this tile on the cart, boxes and boxes and boxes of thousands and thousands of dollars. The people who were looking at it would leave, and this guy would push this cart to the front of the store, out the front door, to the parking lot where he would meet that couple. There'd be an exchange of cash, and he unload all this tile. And we saw this, and we said, this is crazy, this kind of a thing going on here. We watched him do it quite a lot. People would show up. They would ask for this guy, have a conversation. Next thing you know, out the door, he's going, how could that be? How could the management have this idea and not realize what was happening? Well, there was lots of people in the front end that were profiting from it. It was unbelievable. They would all, with a wink and a nod, let the guy know the manager is on lunch break or somebody's out of the way, security's not around, and he would push the cart right out the door, and all the people working the checkout lanes would just kind of smile and nod their heads, and he would go sell this stuff, and everybody was getting a piece. Absolutely shocking. So much so that this gigantic, very well-known box store decided it was better to close down, shut down the entire operation than to continue because the employees that they were getting in there were doing nothing but robbing them blind to the point of thousands and thousands of dollars. It was crazy. But this is kind of where we're at this moment. This wholesale crime we're seeing in our streets, people getting shot randomly, people attacking each other, stealing like it's no big deal, is just it's out of control, and it is symptomatic of our future here if we're not going to get this genie back in the bottle, and that's the question here. All right, so this is Lieutenant Joe saying, hey, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. We'll see you next time down the road here on America Out Loud Radio Network.